Ilham Aliyev, for his part, said he was pleased with the growing ties with Iran. Aliyev said his country is ready to use existing potential to expand cooperation with Tehran. The Iranian top diplomat is also scheduled to meet with other senior Azerbaijani officials. While Israeli forces continue to kill and injure Palestinian civilians across the Gaza Strip, more than 2 months after the ceasefire agreement with Hamas entered into force, Israeli forces continued their violations of the ceasefire agreement on Sunday, launching attacks on the southern and central parts of the territory. Gaza's medical sources reported at least 6 new fatalities and 17 injuries within 24 hours. The fatalities included a Palestinian child who was killed by Israeli forces' gunfire in the Al-Mawasi area of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. Another child was injured by Israeli gunfire in the Al-Tufah neighborhood of Gaza City. More than 370 civilians have been killed since the ceasefire took effect in October. The death toll from the Israeli genocide since October 2023 has risen to 70,360, leaving more than 171,000 others injured. Israeli forces also demolished buildings and opened fire in areas where they remain stationed east of Khan Yunis, as the regime's artillery shelled areas north of Rafah, also in southern Gaza. The International Committee of the Red Cross says Israel continues to prevent its teams from visiting Palestinian prisoners, despite growing reports about their deteriorating health conditions. The Red Cross said its teams have been unable to visit Palestinian prisoners in Israel's jails since the Gaza genocide began in October 2023. The Red Cross said it is working to intensify efforts to reach detainees despite the restrictions placed on its operations. Earlier, the Palestinian Commission of Detainees and Ex-Detainees Affairs warned of the critical health conditions of Palestinians held in Israeli jails. Even Israel's own media have corroborated these reports. The Times of Israel has reported severe weight loss, clear signs of malnutrition, and overcrowding in the regime's jails. It also confirmed repeated physical abuse of Palestinians by prison guards. More than 9,300 Palestinians are currently imprisoned by Israel, including women and children. Reports say detainees face torture, abuse, malnutrition, and medical neglect, resulting in the deaths of dozens. Robert Inlakish says conditions for Palestinian abductees, particularly in the occupied West Bank, have worsened since October 2023. Let's hear more.
It's a problem, particularly in the West Bank, which has afflicted a large portion of the male population in specific. But when we're looking at post-October 7, 2023, those conditions have gotten much worse. We're looking now at a situation where these prisoners have been starved, beaten routinely, sexually assaulted, subjected to all sorts of forms of rape, gang rape, get rape with sticks, the use of dogs to do as such to them. So we're looking at very, very extreme cases. And there's around roughly still 11,000 Palestinians who are held by the Israelis in both prison and then as well military detention camps. And the two are actually different. One is the Israeli military system and military courts, which either produces these administrative detainee orders, which is held without a charge orders, or it eventually convicts Palestinians in its kangaroo court system that has a 99.9% conviction rate. But the others are those who were kidnapped and held hostage from Gaza. And these prisoners, or these hostages, are being subjected to some of the worst forms of torture imaginable.
Well, the UN Special Rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territory has praised a growing European boycott of the Eurovision Song Contest over Israel's presence in the competition. Francesca Albanese called it a sign of shifting public conscience following a long time inaction on the regime's crimes. In a social media post, Albanese lamented that Israel has not been suspended from the UN and other international forums, as well as UEFA, FIFA, FIBA, or cultural events. She argued that the institutional silence on Israel's crimes has allowed the Gaza genocide to be normalized and continue unabated. Albanese was referring to a Eurovision boycott movement that has gained momentum in recent days. Slovenia, Spain, the Netherlands, and Ireland have already announced that they will not participate, citing the contest's failure to hold a vote on banning Israel. Iceland has also indicated that it will hold further discussions before a final decision. Israeli forces have conducted fresh raids into the Palestinian towns of Alar al-Balda in northern Tulkarm region in the occupied West Bank. Our correspondent Nakat Hamad joined us earlier from Ramallah with the latest updates on the ongoing Israeli atrocities across the occupied territory.
Palestinian, a 19 years old Mu'min Nidal Abu Riash, was announced martyred by the direct gunshots by the Israeli forces. Last night, the Israeli forces directly shot live ammunition against those three Palestinians, of course, under the pretense of performing a car ramming operation, which the cameras of the surveillance cameras have clearly denied and showed that the Israeli forces shot those three Palestinians without imposing any threat or danger towards the Israeli forces who were on the land of the village of Azzoun to the east of occupied Qalqilia. This is actually quite similar to what happened in Al-Khalil, where the Israeli forces also shot two Palestinians under the same pretense of performing a car ramming operation, but they were actually just in the street. One of them was a municipality worker who was just cleaning the street and got shot, and the other was a 17 years old Palestinian child who was trying to reach towards his home. With this announcement of the martyrdom of Mu'min Abu Riash, the total number of the Palestinians killed in the occupied West Bank since October 2023 rises up to more than 1,089 Palestinians that have been killed in the occupied West Bank.
While nationwide rallies have been held in Australia in a show of support for the Palestinian people in Gaza, demonstrators have condemned Israel's violations of the ceasefire in Gaza, urging the Australian government to stop arms deliveries to the regime. Max Javilli reports from Brisbane.
Rallies were held on Sunday in major Australian cities in support of Palestinians in Gaza. The rallies took place under the name "The Genocide Continues." Protesters denounced continued Israeli attacks and restrictions on aid entry into Gaza despite a ceasefire that took effect in early October. In Brisbane, about 1,000 people took to the streets, rejecting a plan proposed by U.S. President Donald Trump to end the Gaza war.
I have family in Gaza, and they're in Jabalia, and they're completely under siege. This peace plan is not a plan for peace. This peace plan is a plan for further occupation and the further annexation of land that is not Israeli land.
Last week, some media revealed that Australia continued to transfer to Israel parts for the F-35 fighter jets and other materials, even on passenger aircraft, until October this year.
Last September, Australia recognized Palestine as a sovereign state, becoming one of more than 150 countries to do so. However, pro-Palestine advocates in Brisbane believe that much more is needed from the Australian government to satisfy its obligations under international law.
It's not enough, but there's also a lot more to happen there. There is recognizing that the genocide has been unfolding in the past 2 years, recognizing that there are approximately 100,000 Palestinians who have been killed. At least 83% of them are civilians and innocent people, women and children.
More protests in solidarity with the besieged Palestinians are expected to be organized in various Australian cities before Christmas festivities. Max Civili, Brisbane.
Moving now over to Tunisia, which is preparing to launch a nationwide initiative aiming to gather 1 million signatures to criminalize normalization of ties with the Israeli regime. The move follows regional developments triggered by the Trump-brokered Abraham Accords and comes as civil society intensifies pressure on the parliament to pass an anti-normalization law. Iskandar Nawad reports from Tunis.
Tunisia's anti-normalization movement is entering a new phase. Civil society groups have announced the national initiative to gather 1 million signatures to push parliament to adopt an explicit law criminalizing normalization with the Israeli regime. The campaign builds on years of public opposition reinforced by the Trump-brokered Abraham Accords, which reignited fears of regional pressure on Tunisia to follow suit.
This initiative enjoys broad popular support. Our goal is to collect 1 million signatures to criminalize normalization in Tunisia. Since the Abraham Accords, we witnessed growing public concern and we started raising awareness across the region, where we found strong and consistent backing.
But organizers say the process will take time. Signature collection has not yet begun, as activists work to establish a secure legal mechanism for protecting personal data, a major concern among supporters of the initiative.
We began distributing flyers across different governorates, and we are now working on the legal framework for handling personal data in coordination with the Personal Data Protection Authority and the Interior Ministry to ensure full protection for citizens.
Inside the parliament, the legislative path remains uncertain. Although lawmakers submitted a draft law to criminalize normalization, the process stalled after the speaker relayed that the presidency had warned such legislation could harm Tunisia's external national security.
Parliament has already submitted and voted on the draft law, but it was suspended and remains pending. I believe the 1 million signatures initiative can support and intensify public pressure to move the law forward.
As activists finalize the legal groundwork, the campaign highlights a national debate balancing public pressure, data protection, and the political sensitivity of the proposed law. As Tunisia moves toward launching its 1 million signature campaign, the key question is how public mobilization, data safeguards, and political institutions will converge to advance a law that remains both sensitive and highly contested. Iskandar Nawar, Tunisia.
While calls grow for more countries to boycott the Eurovision Song Contest in opposition to Israel's inclusion in the competition, Ireland, Spain, the Netherlands, and Slovenia have already confirmed that they will not take part in the event next May. Jerome Hughes reports from Dublin.
It may be just a song contest, but analysts say this could be the moment that triggers long-awaited international pressure on the Israeli regime over its crimes against humanity. Because Israel will take part, Ireland will not participate in the 2026 Eurovision Song Contest next May. And state broadcaster RTE is also refusing to air the event.
This is great for to see Ireland boycotting. And I wish to see my own home country, Norway, do this exactly same thing. Where we have been discussing the same topic as you guys in terms of boycotting this year's Eurovision if Israel's going to participate.
Ireland will not be a participant in next year's Eurovision Song Contest.
The same step has been taken by public broadcasters in Spain, the Netherlands and Slovenia, generating widespread international coverage. Campaigners say this alone is a major victory, but they insist pressure must now intensify on EU leaders to seize the moment and impose tough sanctions on Tel Aviv.
I am ashamed to be a European at the moment because the European Union is doing nothing at all. It's not doing nothing to stop the genocide, it's contributing to the genocide.
The European Broadcasting Union, which oversees Eurovision, moved swiftly to ban Russia, yet has taken no such action against Israel. Activists argue that if a major country like Germany were to withdraw, the message would be impossible to ignore. But they say Berlin is unlikely to act due to lingering guilt over World War II.
We are seeing a genocide, in front of our eyes. So you can get away from this guilt feeling and try to solve this problem.
For its part, Irish broadcaster RTE says it would be unconscionable for Ireland to be involved in the Eurovision Song Contest, given the appalling loss of life in Gaza and the humanitarian crisis there. While the decision by RTE has been broadly welcomed here in Ireland, pressure continues on the Irish government to cut all trade ties with Israel and also use its influence in Brussels to encourage other EU countries to do the same. Jerome Hughes at Government Buildings, Dublin.
In other news, Thailand's military has launched airstrikes along its disputed border with Cambodia after clashes that killed one Thai soldier and wounded four others. Thailand Army spokesman Major General Winhai Suvari has said country's aircraft targeted positions in Chongbuk area in northeastern Thailand following alleged Cambodian fire. He added that the military was expediting evacuation support for civilians in border areas. Meanwhile, Cambodia's defense ministry confirmed the raids in two provinces, saying it had not retaliated. The incident is the latest flare-up since a July ceasefire that ended 5 days of fighting, which left 48 people dead and displaced 300,000 others. Tensions have persisted amid long-standing disputes over the 817-kilometer frontier. The Venezuelan army has sworn in thousands of new soldiers as the United States intensifies military pressure on the oil-rich nation.
In these moments, when imperialism threatens our homeland and our people in an illegal, deceitful, false, and arrogant manner, young people are coming by the thousands to join the Bolivarian National Armed Force, to join the General Directorate of Military Counterintelligence, to join the Presidential Honor Guard.
Some 5,600 new soldiers were sworn in following President Nicolas Maduro's call to expand military recruitment in the face of Washington's threats of military aggression. Maduro's call came after the U.S. deployed a fleet of warships, including the world's largest aircraft carrier, to the Caribbean under the pretext of combating drug trafficking. Washington has also carried out deadly strikes on Venezuelan boats at sea, killing more than 80 people. Maduro says the U.S. deployment is aimed at overthrowing him and seizing the country's oil reserves. U.S. President Donald Trump recently threatened Venezuela with an imminent land invasion, once again accusing Caracas of aiding the flow of drugs and migrants into the United States. Well, thank you very much, everyone. Please stay tuned. Goodbye for now.
Palestine, tomorrow will be free. our Father to wipe away my tears. That's why I will cry. I feel scared, but I will show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart. I never have any doubt the Palestine tomorrow will be free. Palestine.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, Salamun Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
One of the blessings, the barakah, the fruit of recognizing Allah is kabir and Allah is azim. Not just believing that Allah exists. Allah exists. Allah's our Khaliq. No, not just that. If I am one of those people who recognizes that Allah is kabir, Allah is great, Allah is grand, one of the blessings of believing in that Allah is that we're able to go through life and feel a deep sense of tranquility and peace. One of the blessings. If someone believes and accepts that Allah is kabir, Allah is azim, and I feel that, again, we're leaning on some of those talks I've had before, not saying it, I can lean in to the idea that Allah is azim. If I can do that, and Allah is great, I can also rely on Allah. I can trust Allah. That's impossible. And then I can feel inner peace. That's impossible unless prior to this, I've embraced Allah as Azim. I want to share one of the laws of the universe so we can get to the fruits of this discussion, inshallah. Can I share a law of the universe with you, brothers and sisters? Can you turn with me to a verse of the Holy Quran? It's about inner peace, right? But there's a principle, and then after that, let's move towards the principle. So this one, brothers and sisters, a law of the universe. And later we're going to see this is in our hands too. Do we want to experience inner peace? Do we want to experience tranquility? If we do, it's in our hands. Law of the universe. The law of the universe is this. This is Surah 13. Surah 13 and verse number 28. 13:28. Allah says this in the Quran. 13:28. الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا. Those who believe. الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا. وَتَطْمَئِنُّ قُلُوبُهُمْ بِذِكْرِ اللَّهِ. And their hearts find peace, find that tranquility, bidhikrillah, with the remembrance of Allah. Then Allah says the principle, next part of the verse. Allah, know this. Allah bidhikrillah tatma'innul qulub. Know this. It is only with the remembrance of Allah. Only with the remembrance of Allah that the hearts find peace. Only with the remembrance of Allah. So, brothers and sisters, now I'd like us to just kind of take a pause. Take a pause. And again, this is because these discussions aren't about anybody else. These are about you and I experiencing the good life that Allah wants us to have right here, before the Akhirah. Have you and I, question now. Have you and I, can we review our lives? Were there times in our lives where we genuinely felt peace? Genuinely. Felt trust, peace, safe. If we examine those, we go back in our lives, the times, those days, those years, maybe for some of us, we spend all of our time like that, where I really felt a deep sense of peace, we will find at that time, I trusted in Allah. The root cause, if you were to ask me, why was it at that period of my life, I truly, really felt that deep inner peace? It was because at that time, for whatever, however long it lasted, I really could relax in Allah's care. And when I did that, I felt it. The rule is, and this is in our hands, if I would like to experience that sukoon, that sakina, that aramish, that peace, the only way is with trusting in Allah. It's contingent to me being able to rely on him. Let me give you an example. We all have heard the stories of Imam Khomeini. Imam Khomeini. May Allah raise him with the Ahlul Bayt. The man who showed us the way. Imam Khomeini had so many amazing things about his personality. But one of them was that inner peace, that lack of fear, absolute bravery, never shaken, never the moment too big, that was there in the life of Imam Khomeini. And if you remember, I shared this previously. Our leader, Imam Khamenei, said this. I have never seen, he said, I take Allah as my witness. I have never seen or heard about, I've never read about anybody who trusted Allah as much. That's the rule. Allah bi dhikrillah tatma'innu al-qulub. One story from the life of Imam Khomeini. Once, during the imposed war, Imam Khomeini was about to offer salah. Right? He was at the stage where literally he's about to do takbir, takbiratul ihram. His hands are up like this, right? So Imam Khomeini about to make salah. His son says, Sayyid Ahmad Agha, he said, I had a telephone call that one of our provinces, either the city in the province or the province itself, had just been attacked They basically were afraid that it's going to fall, and they're calling here, talking to Imam Khomeini. They need to know, what is our responsibility? Khuzestan! What do we do? He says that I came in, and it was such an urgent situation, I couldn't let Imam Khomeini finish his salat. Imam Khomeini's hands are like this, he's about to do the takbir, and I said, I have such and such on the phone. Such and such has just happened. What is our responsibility? Imam Khomeini's hands like this. He said, Imam Khomeini didn't even put his hands down and answer. Imam Khomeini, he just said, tell them to resist. Allahu Akbar. Okay, now that's a description of Imam Khomeini. My question is us. Why is it our tawakkul is weak? Why aren't we able to have that kind of faith and iman and peace? Why is it that we're even sometimes we put on a brave face, right? We're going through life, we put on a brave face. Nobody knows I'm stressed, right? Because I carry myself well. I ooze confidence. It doesn't mean internally that I've reached that stage of Imam Khomeini. That's a high, lofty stage. If I have internal peace, we already learned the principle.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Selection of Ayatollah Khomeini's viewpoints.
It guides us through life.
همه چیز رو تعلیم داده.
It has taught us everything.
باید آموخت. باید فهمید.
We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
و اونگاه پیاده کردن این مفاهیم در واقعیت زندگی.
And try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من. این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد،
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough. Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran.
They say that a barking dog doesn't bite. But Mr. Donald Trump, if I may use the metaphor, has been barking at Mexico for quite some time. Could we be on the verge of witnessing military invasion of Mexico by the Americans? So buckle up, because this is today's journey on Gringo.
Secretary of State saying that we're very close to a deal in the Middle East.
We've been talking about this puppet of war, so we've won the first world war, won the second world war.
Is he a Mexican American that is offended by...
Do you think the United States could militarily invade Mexico? Let me tell you about a Mexican politician who once governed the state of Nuevo León, Alfonso Martínez Domínguez. He used to say that the virtue of a politician is not to solve problems, but to create them. This is something the United States excels at. They have created problems and false flag operations to invade countries. The same was done with Mexico in 1846. They lied to invade Mexico and take away more than half of its territory. The question is, beyond economic warfare, cultural warfare, and the colonization of mines, could it be possible for the United States to militarily invade Mexico?
Since the beginning of the year, Trump has targeted Mexico with thousands of weapons. His army is at the border under the pretext of stopping migration. Then he targeted from the sky, threatening with drones and air force to bomb Mexican territory, claiming it was to stop and eliminate drug traffickers. Recently, the U.S. Navy has been present in the Caribbean Sea, which also borders Mexico. Most recently, the assassination of a mayor was used to demonstrate that Mexican security forces have been unable to control the criminals. And then, national protests from a so-called Generation Z demand justice for that mayor and call for the head of the Mexican government. A protest where the Mexican right wing invested a lot of money. What's brewing in Mexico? Music to Trump's ears.
Would I launch strikes in Mexico to stop drugs? It's okay with me.
What's brewing in Mexico? Destabilization. Invasion. Chaos.
I have as a guest the foreign media correspondent here in Mexico, Raul Torres, whom I warmly welcome. Raul, it's such a pleasure to see you again and to have you here on Gringo. And we have a satellite connection here with Samuel Cruz Trujillo, a historian and analyst with an excellent YouTube channel, author of several books, and also a Mexican who lives in La Paz, Bolivia, to ask him about this topic. I'm really glad to have you back here at Gringo. Samuel, a big hug.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
I'm going to start here with Raul Torres. I've shared many journalistic battles with Raul Torres, We worked together for many years, and Raul, I would like to ask you, as a human being, as a journalist, knowing that you are sensitive and always carry a book, what are you reading now?
It has to do with the United States invasion of Mexico.
Ah, this book. So, what do you think about all this? Because some people say, no, no, I even bet for a dinner with someone who says, no, we won't be invaded. He says, we won't be invaded, but you know, I'm not saying we will be invaded, but still I don't rule it out.
Rubén, primero gracias por invitarme y por los recuerdos, por...
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me and about the question you just asked. Well, I should say, first of all, you know it. I consider you one of my mentors in journalism. You know, I completely agree with you. I don't foresee any immediate scenario where the United States would invade or even send military forces or groups against drug traffickers labeled as terrorists in the short term. However, even though I don't see it happening in the immediate future, it could certainly occur at any moment. I believe that a series of actions and decisions have taken place under President Trump that we wouldn't have anticipated. We never imagined he would exert such pressure. For instance, during his previous administration, telling the Mexican government, I'm going to build a wall and you will pay for it, compelled the Mexican government to first send 28,000 soldiers and National Guard members to the southern border to manage migration. And later over 40,000 across the country in various regions to specifically address migration. And now he's threatening tariffs and such to get them to combat drug trafficking. We can see the government's responses. So I don't see it happening in the short term, but it's something that can't be ruled out because we can expect, it seems to me, almost anything from President Trump.
Do you remember that book about distant neighbors written by the New York Times correspondent here in Mexico? And then Lorenzo Mayer, who wrote an article a long time ago, mentioned how it went from distant neighbors to love without barriers because of the free trade agreement. And then Trump came along and slammed his fist on the table. I don't like this agreement.
Let me share two comments with you. First, I have it noted down as I was reading the book by Alan Redding, titled Distant Neighbors. There's a section in it, you see, from 1984. It's been 40 years, yet it discusses issues that are still relevant today. At one point, it mentions that Mexicans are painfully aware that U.S. interventions and now economic dependency have shaped their historical experience. Even back then, it addressed migration and security issues. And now the fight against drug traffickers, who are being treated as terrorists.
Exactly. Let me go to La Paz, Bolivia, with Samuel Cruz.
Samuel,
you might already know this, and if not, let me see if the production team will help me out by putting up the book by Casper Weinberger. The book is titled The Next War. It has a prologue by Margaret Thatcher. In that book, written by the former Secretary of Defense under Ronald Reagan, there are scenarios of war involving various countries. Many of those scenarios have already happened. It describes a situation where a populist rises in Mexico, leading to chaos, and then the United States intervenes militarily to protect its interests. It's supposed to be fiction, but coming from a Secretary of Defense with a prologue by Margaret Thatcher, it carries weight. But aside from that book, what do you think?
Pero en fin, al margen de ese libro, ¿tú qué opinas?
Pues para empezar, nos debería dar miedo quién hizo el prólogo, ¿verdad?
Well, to start with, we should be wary of who wrote the prologue, right? We need to ask the Argentinians. Personally, I don't rule anything out. It's true I share Mr. Rawls' opinion with great respect, that it doesn't seem likely in the immediate future. However, regarding Caspar's book, I believe that fiction, especially in the United States, is a way of hinting at or preparing you for what lies ahead. Personally, I believe it's important to remember that not too long ago, while we didn't experience an invasion like the ones that caused us to lose nearly half of our territory, which we know all too well in Mexico, we shouldn't forget that in 1914, the United States Navy had Veracruz blockaded. So, it's really not that long ago. I understand that many people feel it's a long time, but unfortunately, as I often say with all due respect, The masses tend to think that the most significant day in history is the day they were born. In other words, they don't study history much, and it really isn't that long ago. Just now, you were discussing a book that's 40 years old. 40 years is nothing. It's my age. It's just a little less than my age. We must always remember that plans, for instance, from the United States are typically not made or two with a one-year outlook. They are often designed for centuries. I used to criticize, and still do, some analysts in Mexico who were pleased when the United States seemed to be losing influence in the West Asia. It's not that I feel happy or sad about their diminishing influence in that region. They would say that the US would lose its grip on West Asia and that the empire would come to an end. No, the empire is not going to end. In fact, empires, when they enter a period of decline, usually have at least 400 years, or 300 to 400 years, of existence left. During this decline, they continue to shape and reshape the world. Just look at the history of Rome. And where do you think the United States would turn when it lost influence in West Asia? Obviously, it would revert to a Monroe Doctrine too, and that's exactly what it's doing. Now, those individuals who were happy and laughing, I'm not going to name names, of course, are now criticizing and complaining. But we need to have a bit of awareness, especially among those who operate in major media outlets with large audiences, who later end up backtracking on the things they said.
I'm very grateful, and I hope to see you on the next episode of Gringo.
You're not aware that we're aware of your despair. Don't show your tears to your oppressor. Don't show your tears. Try not to cry.
Davis Lou Goliath, this very same place that we be at. Passing through the same time, this land been a victim of countless crimes. From crusaders, mongers, to the present aggression. Then the Franks, now even a cruel oppression. If these walls could speak, imagine what would they say for me in this path that I walk on. There's only one way. Bullets may kill, bones may break. Still I throw stones like David before me, and I say,
try not to cry.
No pierdas la fe, la sed, la calma el que hace. Agua de la arena, y tú que te levantas con orgullo entre las piedras. Has hecho mares de este polvo.
I throw stones at my eyes, for too long they've been dry. Plus they see what they shouldn't from oppressed babies to thighs. I throw stones at my tongue, cause it should really keep its peace. I throw stones at my feet, cause they stray and lead to defeat. Couple of big ones at my heart, cause the thing is freezing cold. But my nub's still alive and kicking, unstoppable on a roll. I throw bricks at the devil, so I'll be sure to hit him. But first at the man in the mirror, so I can chase out the venom.
Little boy, shining ahead. Just another kiss and I to get some bread. Not the first murder, nor the last. Again and again a repetition of the past.
Since the very first day, same story.
Young ones, old ones, some glory. How can it be? Has the whole world
turn blind, or is it just cause it's only affecting my kind? If these walls could speak, imagine what would they say? For me, this path that I walk on is only one way.
Bones may kill, bones may break, stand up those stones, like David I say.
Bullets may kill, bones may break, stand up those stones, like David I say.
Try not to cry.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
This is part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a televised address to the Iranian people on September 23rd, 2025. As for the next matter, which is the third topic in the statements of political figures, the issue of negotiating with the U.S. is frequently raised. Well, there are differing views on this. As I have said, some consider it beneficial and necessary, some believe it's harmful, and others have more moderate opinions. Opinions vary. I wish to communicate to our dear nation what I have understood, seen, felt, and experienced over these many years. I also urge our political officials and those active in the political field to reflect on these words, to think about them, and to base their judgments on knowledge and information. My point is that under the present circumstances, now it's possible that in 20 or 30 years the situation may be different, but we aren't discussing that right now. In the current situation, first of all, negotiating with the U.S. government does nothing to serve our national interests. It will bring us no benefit, nor will it shield us from any harm. This is the first point. In other words, it's a fruitless endeavor. It has no benefit for the country, and it doesn't shield us from any harm. It definitely has no such effect. This is the first point. Second, on the contrary, there are also harms that are the result of such talks. That is to say, not only do they lack any benefit, but my second point is that negotiating with the U.S. in the current situation would bring great harm to the country. Some of this harm could perhaps be said to be irreparable. It would have this much harm, which I will now describe. The reason we say negotiations aren't to our benefit and have no advantage for us is because the U.S. side has previously specified the outcome of the negotiations in advance. It has declared that it will only accept negotiations, it wants to enter negotiations, where the outcome will be an end to nuclear activities and enrichment in Iran. This means we would sit at the negotiating table with the U.S. only for the result of our talks to be precisely what they've already decreed must be done. This isn't negotiations. It's dictating the outcome. It's imposition to sit and negotiate with a party when the result must necessarily be exactly what they want and demand. Is that negotiations? This is how the other side is talking now. They say, let's negotiate. And what they want from the negotiations is for Iran to not have uranium enrichment.
I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I want to thank you for bringing me home.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to all our listeners from around the world. I'm Asma here in Tehran announcing our program schedule for the next hour. Hope you will accompany us into the early hours of this morning. We start tonight's lineup with today's special daily mixed format program that deals with various Islamic and Iranian occasions. That will be followed by Hadith of the Day. The program presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, along with a brief explanation and commentary on the hadith. Then we have our radio productions feature. And to round up this hour's programs, we have Let's Recite the Quran. The program teaches eloquent recitation of the Quran at level 2. Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Rabbitu billahi rabba wa bil islam.